first drink of the day. The first drink of the day. The first drink of the day. The first drink of the day. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Football Podcast, show number 86. We've been forced to move inside.
Yeah.
I think the British summertime has failed us. It's been the first time we've had to do a podcast inside
prepare,
for a while.
Prepare.
I think we've had a decent little run. But around the table, we have Mr. Sean Miller.
We've got Porky Pig with us.
We have, We've got Jerome. No way to call Jerome liar. We've got Mr. Michael Coxon.
Salutations.
We've got Mr. Dan Silver.
Hello.
He's already putting the beat in. We haven't got Stuart Hall, unfortunately, so we're going to miss his vocal presence. Right, show number 86.
And his decision making, to be fair.
He did find a role for himself last week, didn't he?
We've got Jim Staples here as well, don't forget yourself.
Thank you very much.
There we go. I thought it was about Sean in pink.
Show number 86, 1986, at the age of 52, Pedro Gatica cycled from his home in Argentina to Mexico, only to find when he got to Mexico that he couldn't actually afford to get into any of the games.
Oh.
Whilst he was haggling for a ticket to their opening game, someone stole his bike. I don't know how true that story is, but I googled 1986 footballing story or footballing stat and that came up.
So I like it.
There you go. And also, at the same time, rather randomly, whose grounds, Football League ground or former Football League grounds, is the closest to the River Mersey?
Tranmere. It's Stockport County.
Edgeley Park is the closest ground, even though it's in the suburb of Manchester, it's the closest ground to the River Mersey. I also found that out this morning whilst I was googling 1986, so there you go.
Mersey Paradise.
Absolutely nothing, I just thought I'd say it, but look, there you go, now you know it. Say it to people. Yeah. If you ask them what's the closest ground to Merseyside, I don't think they're going to say Edgeley Park, Stockport County, are they?
No, you're right.
I could give you some Stan Rose's trivia on that, but I'm not going to bother because it'll bore everyone.
What, on Edgeley Park?
On the Mersey running through Manchester.
Yeah, go on.
It's
boring everyone. Mike Coxon's angry again, it's a bad start.
I'm always angry.
A little bit of movement in the Euro 2012 tournament since we last spoke.
Just one round, yeah.
Yeah. Basically, we recorded this last Wednesday, just before all the quarterfinals kicked off.
Yep.
They're done, they're dusted, we're out. Let's talk about domestic football. Right, we'll start with the England game. Basically, before we all left each other on Wednesday lunchtime when we recorded this show, we were basically saying, look, it's a 50-50 game. We did our predictions. A lot of us thought it would finish a draw after 90 minutes, which it did. We thought it was going to be tight. We thought it was going to be close. We actually said if there is a goal in it, there'd be a one goal in it. It's very near the way it worked out because Italy could have had a few chances. If Italy had scored in the second half, I think they would have just sat on that anyway.
They
would have seen what we could do, and I don't think we would have had much in the tank. But
no.
So, what's everyone's thoughts on it? On the game itself, we start with the game itself. I mean,
can I just say that when I was sat there, I went out with a few of the lads, started boozing about three. So, come at the start of the game, I was merry.
Yeah.
Come extra time, I was pretty bamboozled. And then when that last penalty went in, I was sat there, and do you know what, I was even more pissed off about than England going out was that
you used the word bamboozled.
No, well, that's a great word. What are you talking about? No, I was more pissed off about the fact that the only thing we really were going to have to talk about the England game was you going. And I was like, all we're going to have to do is sit there and listen to Jim Staples say about his experience and his time. And I was like, all he's going to talk about is, I was there, yeah, brilliant.
Did you see him stood behind the goal for the penalties?
Yeah.
Can we just clear this up? That was not me stood behind the goal for the penalties.
You're right, because you wouldn't have been seeing your cop from there.
Well, they were zooming in quite a lot on the photo anyway, to be honest, but I think fair play to the lads for trying it.
Exactly.
They haven't exposed, so to speak, who they actually are yet.
Have you seen the fella has come down, he's been interviewed in a down market tabloid newspaper today that isn't the Daily Mirror.
I haven't seen the Mirror tops.
And basically, he's a multimillionaire, owns a financial company, lives just down the road from John Terry.
Oh, really?
And he follows England all around Europe, and he said, well, I thought I might as well try it for a laugh. My wife's 8 months pregnant, and she thought it was hilarious.
Excellent. The only bad thing about that photo And it, for people who don't know, there's a photo of when the last penalty goes in. Yeah, because he's turning post. And there's a couple of guys that just decide to try and put the player off by getting their penises out. The only bad thing is there's two kids
right there
sitting right next to them, two little kids, and then I hope they're not their own. Well, yeah, I thought it would be better if they are their own.
No,
kids.
No, you much kids. Prefer it was their own kids than someone else's kids.
That, depends what age. The age of about 5 or 6 or 7 or 8, I was fine with seeing my dad's penis. Getting out of the shower, like, all right, yeah.
Go. It was a daily occurrence for you.
He was very free. Get out. He had it all out. A little bit strange.
Yeah, you're right. That is a little bit strange.
11, 12. No, it's not strange. What, seeing your dad's penis
every day
when he gets out of the shower?
Why aren't you watching him get out of the shower?
What he was doing wearing the England shirt when he went out? I don't know. But
joke
gets to 12. Right, okay. Let's go back to the game because we do need to get back to the game. 0-0. 31 shots for Italy.
Yep.
18 on target compared to our 8 shots, 4 on target. And after, apart from that, not a lot else happened. They got two bookings. Bob Bozzagli, was it?
Bozzagli, the left back, right back,
centre half.
No, I thought he was right back. He got booked for a late challenge on Ashley Young, wasn't it? And that put him out of the semi final, which is disappointing for him. But we didn't really get at him, did we?
It Maggio who suspended?
Maggio was suspended. He was the right back. He came on for a bar take. Yeah. He put himself injured, so it might have a problem.
Well, exactly. Yeah, they might have to play Balotelli there.
I think they've got more of a problem about the play in Germany.
Yeah, I think when the game first started, we had a few chances.
First
we went out.
20 minutes.
Built up my hope. Yeah. I thought, you know what? We're taking this. I thought Glenn Johnson was great going forward. Obviously, he had that chance which kind of stuck under his foot a little bit.
Didn't want it to fall to Glenn Johnson, did you?
No, really not.
Although, to be fair, he did well with it.
Yeah, he did. He did the right thing. Definitely.
Lifting it, because if he did straight,
the right thing would have been scoring, surely.
If that had been a Gerrard or a Rooney or on a playing for a different team, someone like Messi or Ronaldo, it would have been a touch of genius, bit of improvisation, so unlucky it came off. Glenn Johnson, he shanked it.
Yeah.
Well,
he
toe
punt it.
Yeah, but I just don't think he gave it enough.
And it was at the keeper.
He got into the right position though, and that's all you can ask. And anyone else,
you can ask him to score. Yeah. But he's an international footballer. That's not all you can ask.
With two defenders on the floor, what else could he have done?
Put it
left or right of the goalkeeper.
Well, it's not that easy when you get the ball out with your feet. Yeah. And I'm no particularly Glenn Johnson fan. I think he's had a great tournament, but I think what he did there was the right thing. Unfortunately,
I'll stick up for Glenn Johnson.
I think he was our best player in that game.
Definitely.
I don't know. I thought John Terry.
John Terry.
You look at the last ditch challenges he made. At least half of those were positions he'd put himself in by being out of position or playing the man onside. When
How many times did we get caught from a long ball over the top to Balotelli?
And that's it. It's great for John Terry to run in and make that last ditch challenge, but when he's putting himself in that position, it does tarnish it and it does take away a bit from what he's doing.
I think if you look at our back four, when you look at them, I think they all play quite well. To be fair, though, they haven't done a lot of running in the tournament because of the way we were playing with that flat back four.
Yeah.
If you look at where they didn't do much. They didn't have to do that much running. Like, they'll be going on their holidays thinking, I've got a nice few weeks off.
Yeah.
Scott Parker and Steve Gerrard are probably like crawling.
They were absolutely done after 20 minutes. It was no coincidence.
Well, Scott Parker has been done all tournament. Yeah. He's not fit.
Which was the way we were set up. Yeah, I mean, for a man who's not fit, he put some running in and he did a decent job. So, okay, so we started quite lively. Second half, it was pretty much all Italy, but we had that one chance at the end with Rooney.
Yeah.
The commentator actually said it. I've watched it back since, and it's true. It came off his right at the top of his foot. It's actually where you want it to come off.
Yeah.
Like the goal against Man City, that didn't come off the top of his foot. That actually came off his shin pad, didn't it? It's where you wanted it to come off, and it would have been. It was a lovely knockdown. First bit of good football we played in a while.
Yeah.
Which would have been nice, but
it was just really uninspiring.
It was.
We've got nothing to lose. Like, let's just go for it.
It's easy to say that in retrospect. So now I'm having the same feelings. I'm like, we should have just gone out there and attacked them. Like, we're England. Like, we did have players that could do something. We got Young on the ball. We got Rooney on the ball. It's very easy to say in retrospect. But at the time,
we knew before the game, this is the worst Italian team for about 20-30 years.
The problem is,
tactically, we got it wrong anyway. I've done the same thing at Hodgson, but I think he's done a great job so far.
So what would you have done? What would you have done differently?
I would have put three in midfield and anyone
but
would,
it was highlighted.
I think Rooney was supposed to
I think Welbeck
was more expected
one of them. You can't expect them to go forward and then expect to chase back and get Rooney and get on Pirlo as well.
Yeah,
you can't expect them
that,
to.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the worst thing asking Rooney to take out Pirlo, that kind of negates our best attacking. Exactly.
The worst thing that happened for us was first 15 minutes, we looked like we were going to attack. We did get forward. We didn't look bad at all. Glenn Johnson had his chance. But then we let Pirlo get on the ball.
Yeah.
And that's where we went out. But and then it was heads dropped, backs to the wall.
I think it's no coincidence that after 20, 30 minutes, both Parker and Gerrard looked fucked.
Yeah.
And that's when Italy dominated.
The problem is, well, people keep saying that Rooney should be the player dropping back. Rooney has always been his best for United when he's been a centre forward. He's great. Yeah, he loves bombing around. But we should play to his strength. He should be up top. That's it. I mean,
he's not the most talented footballer.
He is.
So play to.
We're making the same
strength.
Mistake we made with Paul.
Excuse
Stone.
Me. Shoot Downing was in that squad.
Well, true.
Okay.
So just be careful.
We're making the same mistake with both Rooney and Stuart Downing that we made with Paul Scholes.
Exactly,
we've got this wonderfully talented player, experienced at the highest level. We're not playing to the strengths, we're just putting them into a formation because of their name.
Then what would you have done? What would you have done differently?
I would have played Rooney more up top. I would have, against the Italians, had a three-man midfield.
Definitely.
I would have had Phil Jones in there, personally, and I don't overly rate him. But he could have won all day, and he could have stayed on Pirlo. He would have been a little terrier.
I still think we should start with Andy Carroll. I still want to start because they both did exactly what I said they'd do. They did both of them, Welbeck and Rooney, dropped deep and tried to link up play.
Yeah, that's the problem. The problem with Carroll is, as shown when he came on, all we did, and fair play, won everyone there, but all we did was lump it to his head on the halfway line. He had no one around him. He had Rooney.
He did as well as he could have done.
No wingers there to attack it. If you're going to do that, you need a three-man midfield so Carroll can knock it down to the wingers. Someone can
okay,
pick
so
up
you,
and
so,
cross
so
the ball in.
Jay, you would have put a three-man midfield with Jones in as well.
Oh, definitely.
Even the starting lineup. The point I made to you two, say that we had completely changed our tactics for the starting lineup against Italy and we'd have lost the game, would you not have been saying to Hodgson, well, we were playing well, we were looking solidly?
It's what you're going to. I think the 4-4-2 formation is outdated, first of all. Most of the players.
But it wasn't really a 4-4-2.
I think the 4-4-2 can work.
Italy played a version of it.
Yeah, it can work very well. The problem is, we weren't playing our opposition. We were playing a system regardless of the opposition. The best teams can change.
This is the whole argument with against the Croatia game, wasn't it? Is that the first half against Croatia, Italy dominated.
Yeah.
And then they changed it up. He actually mixed up the formation in the second half. Shock horror, something we never do.
Yeah.
And he pushed Modric right up top to cut out Pirlo. And basically force the issue on him and they should have won.
I mean, it wouldn't be fair to blame Hodgson for any of this, I don't think, because he's done what he's been able to do. He's been in the job for six weeks.
Yeah.
But in the future, and I mean, it's been a problem under Sven, under Capello, under McLaren. The only England manager I can remember in my time who's changed it is Terry Venables, who changed formation by the game during Euro 96 to suit the opposition. I mean, Glenn Hoddle did it to an extent, less successfully, but we need that. We
this
need
is what I there was no
options.
There was no plan B.
The good thing for us is going forward, we look like we've got options. I mean, it showed a bit in this tournament. We could bring Walcott on or Carroll into the starting lineup. We have Rooney coming through. We've got Oxlade-Chamberlain. That's before you get to all the injuries. Players like Wilshere, Rodwell, who missed the tournament. So we do have
just quickly. Right, let's go back to the game. So went to extra time. I think both teams pretty much settled. There wasn't really many chances in extra time, was there? To speak of.
Right at the beginning, Balotelli had a chance. Another
De Rossi was his in the second half.
A disallowed goal as well. That was tight.
Yeah. That was off.
It was offside, but it was very, very tight.
Tell you what, the cheers in the pub when I was watching that. That was the biggest cheer in the game, that offside goal. We celebrated like it was we'd scored.
Well, do you know what really wound me up is that I only got to cheer once, really.
Yeah.
And that was when the Italians missed their penalty. That was the only time the entire game I actually got animated. The rest of the time I was sat there, arms folded, legs crossed.
Bamboozled.
And bored, to be honest.
Can I stop everyone right here? We've lost one game, and it seems like the four of you now, like you're saying, oh, it's bored, we've got no plan B. We've had so many positives. We sat outside last week talking about so many positives.
That Italy game was shit.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. We've got the options going forward.
That game itself was shit.
Okay, what were you expecting? You sat there with your arms folded, bored. That's how we set up the tournament. We knew that was going to be the case.
I didn't know that. I sat there open mouthed in wonder at Perlo. I thought it was fantastic. Well, and his penalty was the icing on the cake.
Yeah, that Panenka was absolutely top.
Well, the worst thing for me is Joe Hart went on about how he'd researched all the penalties.
Yeah,
there's four videos on YouTube of Perlo trying that, one of which he missed.
Yeah, but he doesn't do it all the time. So he's got to gamble. Is he going to do it or is he not? Probably in a quarter final. Has he got
there? You would at least hope he'd think, if he does have this in his arsenal, hold back, don't make the early dive, risk it. You can still dive for it, you still might save it if it's a bad penalty.
The penalties were cutting. As soon as it went to pens, I was sort of saying to myself, right, we're going to lose.
As soon as that's
which is what you do. But then the way it all started, the way we were winning, even in the penalty shootout, and as soon as we went in the lead, 2-1 up, I actually thought, we're actually going to do it, like, because it's different under Hodgson and there's no expectation. And then that was the first time during the whole day that I actually thought we're going to do it. And then
Young had the right idea but the wrong execution, because if you're not confident you should just smack it in.
Personally, I don't like Ashley Cole as a penalty taker. I don't think he hits the ball
he's scored every penalty in shootouts that he's taken before that, but he always puts it the same way, and he always does the same thing, low to the keeper's left.
I mean, that's right, because if you put it low and keep it left and it's a good enough penalty, then they're not going to save it, are they? And Roy Hodgson was saying, basically, that the players had practiced their penalties.
That's the easiest way to dive for a goalkeeper, you know that, isn't it?
Well, it depends what handed they are.
He's right-handed, he's right-footed. So if you're always putting it in, for you, the bottom right-hand corner of the goalkeeper's left, you've got to hit it spot-on, because that is the easiest way for a right-handed goalkeeper to dive.
You can't really criticise the people who took them and missed them, because at least they took them. They're the people that put their hands up, they're the people who've done well in training.
And that's what he said. He said in training they've been practicing penalties, so they all stepping up. None of them would change their mind. They all took the penalty that they wanted to take. So actually, Young might have just been hammering it and deciding where he was. And Royalty said the difference was Perlo had the balls to do that in a game where he just changed what he was going to do.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's interesting. People were saying in the press conference as well to Hodgson, like, do we have to start training more? And you can't replicate Hodgson is bang right when he says it's the fact that they've run around. The only way you could replicate it is to get 60,000 people in a stadium, get the players to run around for 120 minutes and then step up and take it. And even then there's nothing really on it, so exactly.
I would like to see us when we play friendlies, if you can do it if you draw up full time, if they can say, right, we're going to
I've always thought that it's still not
going to replicate it, because there's not the pressure.
Exactly, but also it makes some dull, pretty dull friendlies a bit more interesting.
Exactly.
Would it finish at the end? 0-0 with Switzerland. Yay, penalties! How many people would leave Wembley? Just go, right, I'm going to leave now to get on a tube.
Metropolitan line will be quiet now. Here we go.
Again, it could just continue our run of poor penalty form.
Maybe.
Winning wrong and beat us on penalties. Yeah.
The thing is, if you lose at penalties in a friendly, you're not really going to care. If you win at penalties in a friendly, it might give you that bit more confidence. We won at penalties. I took a great penalty in that. Do it again.
But just going back to what you were saying, Jim, it's not like the attitude of, you know, that's how we were the entire time. You look at the Sweden game, we actually looked like we had a bit of bite and a bit of passion. Yeah. We went behind and we freaking went for it. We were
But
that's the problem at the Italy game. Is what I'm saying is it was shit, because we didn't have that bite. I'm tired or whatever you want to call it, but there wasn't that. We went behind against the Swedes and we went for it, and we showed that.
It's a different game though, isn't it?
It was just so disappointing, just watching it, thinking there was just not even, it didn't even seem like there was a little bit of fire left. They were all
there's something to build on there, really.
Yeah,
Where are you from, sir?
France. Thought you were going to say Italian then.
No.
So, what did you make of the France exit the other day? Did you watch it?
What?
Did you watch the game?
Yeah,
football?
Of course I watched it.
Yeah. Disappointing.
It was shit.
The waiter says it was shit.
It's true, you know.
Fair play. Yeah. Right, talk to him. Okay.
Well, I think there's something to build on there, isn't it? We've got a good structure and we've got a good defensive structure.
And we've got no good players.
Right. And this is what I'm going to come on to as well. Which I
just quickly, what's he actually giving us?
£1,000.
Yeah.
No one wins it.
No, but for the listeners, that was a little bit. Because to them, they're just going to be like, we're talking, then just a random Frenchman comes.
He's the French guy.
That's interesting. You explained it as a waiter.
It's a waiter came over, tried to give us some stuff, and he's gone now. Jay, go back to it. Didn't like the France game either. He said it was shit.
What I was going to say is basically, I think from grassroots to professional league, I think we haven't got the technical players in, but we haven't got the technical gifted players that a lot of other countries. Because of the way this is the way they used to coach, and most of these players have come from this generation. If you're a big guy, you go out the back. If you're a quick guy, you go on the wing. And that's it. And basically, you give it to the quick guy, get him running, and get it to the strikers.
If you're little, you don't get a game. Yeah.
If you're little, you don't get a game.
And that's why me and you are rubbish.
Yeah.
It's got nothing to do with your size.
It's interesting because I remember back to when I was younger and I played for two different teams. One of the teams won the league.
Two teams had you.
I moved from one team to the one team won the league all the time. I didn't necessarily play for them all the time. But we focused a lot on passing from the age of 8. We focused a lot on skills, movement. The other team, not very good. It was all about having a laugh, which was great when you're 15, 16, you don't really care. But all we used to do in training, we'd have a match, we'd do a little bit of passing, a little bit of running, that was it. And that's what the difference.
That's the attitude from grassroots.
No, that's Sunday League.
This is junior football.
This is how it is. This is the mentality of a lot of coaches, a lot of clubs.
A lot of back in the day.
Okay, but
would you not say that the FA finally they have recognised this?
Recognised this, but it's like 20 years too late.
It's 20 years too late for now.
Spain done this years ago, and look at the position they
are in. True.
But then again, perennial underachievers, though,
they were an England level team until the last 6 years.
Exactly, and also Germany. Look at Germany after, what was it? Was it Euro 2000?
Euro 2000, they went out of the group. 2008, they went out in the group stage.
They were absolutely awful.
They've changed it from
They haven't waited 20 years to do that, and they might have had plans in place. I think the FA, They've made one good appointment this summer in Roy Hodgson. I think now, after the tournament, we can all actually see that. And he wasn't brought in for this tournament. You've got to remember that as well.
Yeah.
He wasn't brought in to win this tournament. Yeah. He wasn't said, right, you've got to win this tournament. He had four bloody weeks to prepare.
Exactly. Yeah. Finally, a bit
he's done amazing for the time he's done.
That's why I'm saying. Take the Italy game out of it. I think there's so much to be positive about the future. They've now got the keys to this St George's Centre in Burton or wherever it is.
Yeah.
So what you're saying is the FA are finally, and you're right, it is too late, but they've actually now looked at it and they wouldn't agree with you. I'm sure if Trevor Brooking was in front of you or whoever was in front of you, they wouldn't agree with what you've just said. I think they would say no, because there's a lot of people, good people in football, that don't think like that. And I'm sure at the FA they didn't have coaches in place 10, 15 years ago that only said lump the ball, give it to the quick guy.
I'm not saying it's lump the ball kind of thing. I just think it was a mentality that it was get the ball forward as fast as possible. And that's not necessarily you don't have to do that. Look at a team like Spain. Spain can hold on to the ball for like 5 minutes at a time. I'm talking about 5 minutes. We can barely hold the ball for five passes. Yeah. And that's a massive difference.
I don't think we can rely on this centre at Burton as a be-all and end-all. It's great for young players.
This is what I'm worried about. We've got a new centre.
Yeah.
Oh, well, now we're going to be
brilliant. We had that at Liverpool for years.
I don't think it's about the centre.
I think it's about a change in attitude. Yes. There's been a massive shift.
Change needs to be throughout English football. It needs to be the people coaching kids in Cheshire.
Do you not feel that changing?
It's great that now they're limiting it to, I think it's 9-a-side rather than 11-a-side.
They're going to be using smaller balls as well.
The thing is, I remember we played with a size 4 ball. When we were
6 years old, we were playing size.
Mike's trying to get into the England team, isn't he?
Yeah.
Either that or a coaching job at the
FA. I've seen kids of 10, 11 years old now who've got so much technical ability. It's unbelievable. I'm not talking about foreign kids, I'm talking about English kids as well.
Right. This is where you been hanging around with a load of kids?
I've seen YouTube mainly. But
I wanted to do Alton.
Why have you been looking up 10 or 11 year old kids on YouTube?
Hey, to be fair, we have a talent.
Yeah, with one of these. John Miller.
That's true. Did you put a kid up?
I did, yeah. I put a kid up.
But he was French.
He was French. Get the waiter over. Why the fuck we called him a waiter? We're in a boozer. He ain't a waiter, is he?
He works in the food section.
Yeah, but if you ask,
wait for us to finish.
We're not in a place that serves food. We're in a place that's just booze. We're a pub. It's a pub car.
Ask him to bring you a pint over. I bet he swears at you in French. All right, let's move on slightly, fellas. I asked a question to you guys the other day. From the team that finished the game, or from the 14 players that played in the game, who would you have in your squad? So not necessarily your starting lineup. Who would still be in your team? I just want a yes or no, and maybe a bit of discussion on each one of them for the next World Cup. So we'll start. Joe Hart in goal will be 27 at the next World Cup.
100%.
Okay, you're shaking your head then.
I was shaking my head as if it's not even really a question.
I will say Joe Hart was disappointing for me at this tournament, but obviously he's the best English goalkeeper.
I thought he fumbled a lot. He didn't look that confident. I don't think he was.
What have you turned into?
I love this crazy.
I'm not in a particularly good mood today.
Then 6-8 years ago, you probably would have said Paul Robinson would be in your squad in 2012.
Yeah. See, this is what always happens.
You've got to wait and see.
Yeah, this is what always happens, because in the papers the last couple of days there's been these. What will the lineup be in 2014? I'd love to look back to like when we went out of like Euro, or when we didn't qualify for Euro 2008. What would a World Cup be in 2010?
You would have said, I hate it when they do these. I hate it when they do these, because they always put the young, talented star of the Crystal Palace team in. I've read in The Guardian that the next team.
Sean, calm down a little bit. You're going over the scale on this.
They didn't put Attilio Lombardo in there, did they?
I read in The Guardian that.
Is Dougie Freeman going to play? He's going to transfer to England.
No, Wilfried Zaha is due to be in the next England team, apparently. But the last time I read this, it was apparently for the 2016 Euros or whatever it was, the 2014 World Cup, John Bostock was supposed to be England captain.
Yeah.
Let's carry on doing what we're doing.
On Micah Richards though, anyone, I'm not even sure if we're allowed to talk about it. Have you heard the rumours of why he's wasn't involved in the?
Yeah, I have.
I haven't, but if we
I don't
can't
know,
talk
I
about
don't
it,
know
tell me
are,
after.
Let's leave it. Yeah. Glenn Johnson at right back will be 29. You've got to think that there'd be other options, or Richards is only going to be
if Johnson's still on form though, why not? If he's playing well enough, then 29's not
too
well.
A lot better player than he is.
Who knows what'll happen though? But
we're talking about
he'd be in consideration, but
I think that's one of the Kyle Walker, we missed him a lot this time, because I think as an attacking right back he is 10 times better than Glenn Johnson, and he gets back and he defends, which is something that Johnson did not do well enough. The amount of times on the break we got caught because Johnson did not get back,
he was out of position at times, certainly against France,
and massively against France.
Lescott and Terry. Lescott's going to be 31, John Terry's going to be 32.
Lescott's in with a shout, I'd say.
You wouldn't put both of them are
John Terry now.
In the squad, okay, in the squad maybe, but I think
if Lescott for the next 2 years plays consistently for Man City, as he has been.
John Terry only 30?
Apparently. Really? He might be 32 now, and he's 34 now. Someone look up on the phone. If Lescott plays consistently for Man City over the next two seasons, and I think the next squad
if he's
we have.
Still there.
Well, this is it as well. But
supposedly, he might be going to Liverpool.
Yeah, but
Lescott.
Apparently. It's
interesting.
I think Lescott had a really good tournament.
That is one of the big positives, I think, because I never really rated him. I know I said this before. No, he must have had must be good.
He was great at Everton.
He won the title with Man City last year. But I thought he really, came into his own this tournament.
Okay, and then Ashley Cole will be 33. That's a tough one because it depends how
fullbacks can go on. Stuart Pearce was that age when he's at Euro 96. I mean, Gary Neville was playing until he was out.
31 at the moment.
So, he's going to be 32, 33.
I can't see Leighton Baines, or unless there's a youngster comes
out. Well, that's it, Ryan Bertrand.
Bertrand for Chelsea at the moment.
The options, I'll go through some defensive options for you as I sort of see him. Phil Jagielka was very unlucky with injuries, but he'll be 31.
Yeah.
Phil Jones, 22.
I'll have him in.
Not a left back.
Somewhere a defensive cover. Kelly, the right back, will be 24.
He hasn't really looked good
for Liverpool when he's played, but he's only played 10 games a season. So.
Okay. Leighton Baines will be 29. You would have thought he'd be in the squad. Yeah. He's going to be one of those players where you look at. He played four times for England or whatever just because of Ashley Cole.
Yeah.
And Ryan Bertrand, as we said, Gibbs as well. If he carries on playing like he's at Arsenal, he's 22 now. He'll be 24. If he's not in the would he still be at Arsenal though? That's the thing. He'd probably be at West Brom or something like that.
He's a little bit injury prone as well. So
going down the list, we've got Cahill, who was very unlucky. Let's be honest, Cahill would have been.
He would have started
at centre back, and I actually think he would have 26 years now, I think he would have had a great tournament as well, in the setup that we had.
Yes. I'd rather have Cahill and Lescott at centre half, because I think John Terry's already lost his pace. And
I think John Terry played well this tournament.
He played well this tournament, don't get me wrong, but in two years' time, not a chance.
Chris Smalling.
I'll tell you what, though, looking at that little list you've got there, that's probably the most positive thing I can see. And I just got because we're getting on a bit a little bit. Well, Smalling, Richards, Wilshere. Rodwell hasn't got any hamstrings, unfortunately. I can't see him lasting that many more years. Jones, Bertrand, Gibbs, Victor Moses.
Look, Victor Moses has declared himself for Nigeria.
He's played a few times for Nigeria now, unfortunately. Shame.
But there's actually a bit of young talent coming through. You've got your Oxlade Chamberlain, you've got your.
Wilshere's going to be 22, so he's going to be pinning on him, especially when what we're saying.
I hope that we don't pin like we did with Rooney. I don't mean, do you know what?
But what I'd love them to do is just scrap the oldies. Let's just sod it.
An under 30s team, pretty much. Maybe with an exception for Ashley Cowell.
I don't see the need to do it.
He did say he's going to change the team for, I think, our first friendly, which is Italy. Then he's going to say for the qualifiers, he's going to revert back to norm, whatever.
Well, it'll be a middle ground, but.
I just think, let's just
get. Rooney and Welbeck. Rooney's going to be 28 next World Cup. Welbeck's going to be 23.
Yeah.
Another point I read.
Welbeck is only 21.
Yeah.
It's obscene.
Another point I read as well is that our group for World Cup is like we should beat every team in that
group.
Well,
it's Poland, Ukraine, San Marino, I can't remember the other two teams.
San Marino.
Azerbaijan, Kazakhstan, making up countries.
Colimore.
What I read is that in South America, basically, South America, no team outside of South America has won a South American tournament. Are we going to go there?
Well, until the last World Cup, no European team had won it outside of Europe. And then South Africa.
They've already said that we're going to do a big tournament in Brazil, maybe the end of next year, to acclimatise and get used to it and stuff like that, which is more forward thinking from the FA.
The Euros and the following 2 years is in front, so isn't that a better, like a much better goal.
Wait, we're discounting the World Cup already? I just read this, which I'm just slightly worried
that in 2 years' time we're not going to have a great deal of extra talent.
Well, you never know. Did anyone know who Alex
Oxlade-Chamberlain was a minute ago?
For the future, I'm talking about, because these are kids. These are like 20, 21, 22 year olds. In 2 years' time, I'm not talking about that. I'm looking at the next Euros. But I'm doing it in 2 years' time because they're not going to change it enough. And then by the next Euros, in 4 years' time, they've got no chance but to get rid of some of the old lot because they literally will be.
Why not blood them in this? I agree, Jay.
But it's not going to happen because while you can still get the legs out of your Gerrards and your Parkers and your Terrys and stuff, they'll keep using them until they can't anymore.
At least nobody's pinned it all on Nick Powell yet. Give that a few weeks.
Yeah, exactly.
Phenomenal talent.
You knew about him before anyone. You were at his birth, weren't you?
I basically got him.
You saw his dad's
penis. Yeah. Got another promotion.
Right, let's stop talking about my dad's penis. Please. All I will say from my time in Kiev, I spoke to you all about it. The atmosphere was absolutely amazing. I was in the outside the ground with like Russian fans. A load of Russian fans had met my mates and just put England shirts on.
Yeah.
Come out and we're watching.
Let me warn about that in the crowd.
No, but in a good way. In a good way. It was really good atmosphere. And the England fans were absolutely phenomenal. For the last 20 minutes of extra time, we were singing Roy Hodgson's Barmy Army non-stop.
And
even at the end, like the players came around, you could tell how gutted they were, and everyone was disappointed, the fans, the players, everyone. There was a sense of the people out there, there was a sense of this could be the start of something.
Yeah.
It really could. And that's what I've come back with. One of the best things
about this team in this tournament is it has reconnected the team with the fans. When you look at the last World Cup.
Danny Welbeck. Every song out there, every other song was Les Will Do the Welbeck. After he saw it against Sweden, he did the thing with pushing his arms out. I don't really know what it was. Yeah, but every other song. So there was like 10,000 England fans there, and then they stopped singing Barmy Army, and then someone just went, Les Will Do the Welbeck. So you got 10,000 England fans doing that. And when he was warming up, he was giving it a bit of that as well.
Brilliant.
Absolutely brilliant.
Brilliant.
So Welbeck is already an England's fan favourite just because of that sort of celebration. I think we should all do the Welbeck.
Yeah.
Come on, Dan.
Yeah, look at
Dan's face. Oh, he's not an happy man. Right, well, let's move on. There was some other games.
Was there?
Yeah.
Didn't see him.
Czech Republic 0, Portugal 1. Ronaldo with the decisive goal.
It's always going to be, wasn't it?
Do you reckon? Well, he performed well in the game before, so yeah. Why not?
Everyone just passes it to him. Otherwise,
Ronaldo was fantastic.
But he wasn't great. Well.
Czech Republic didn't show much. They had two shots, one off target, one on target.
It was a shame. I mean, they're clearly
fly
not
through these because they weren't that inspiring. Were
Ronaldo,
you wouldn't be saying that if you were German, would you?
Ronaldo can win the tournament for Portugal.
You reckon?
He is that good, and he has started the last couple of games. He's
that is an outrageous statement considering they're playing Spain tonight.
I think they'll beat Spain.
We'll
tonight,
go on to that. We'll go on to that in a minute. Germany 4, Greece 2.
I got really excited. Oh, right,
I do. When
Samaras scored.
Yeah,
yeah.
I'll tell you
for all of 4 minutes.
Yeah,
tell
exactly.
You Joachim Löw clearly wants to win the Fantasy Football League by dropping Gomez and dropping those players.
I tweeted about it at that time.
I'd love to see his team. I bet he had Closer as captain. He threw Rose in there, the cheating little
It was an outrageous starting lineup, wouldn't it? They were like, well, we're going to go through this round, so let's just play the reserve team.
Was it a bit of tactical...
Well, I don't think there was tactics. No. I think it was giving them a run out.
Yeah. It was a little bit disrespectful in some ways. Because
it was.
Imagine if they'd lost that game. He would have been absolutely crucified, wouldn't he?
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, even if they were 2-0 down at half time, they could have brought them on. They probably would have won anyway. Yeah. But it was still a bit cheeky, wasn't it?
Closer has now moved closer to Gerd Müller's record as top scorer. Yeah. So I think he's 4 goals off now.
Good
goal by Philipp Lahm as well.
Yeah,
which
strike,
he just loves doing that, doesn't he?
Yeah, he done that
in
the opening World Cup, didn't he?
So 4-2, Germany and Portugal through.
We've had our chat on the next game, haven't we, from the waiter?
yeah, exactly. Spain weren't they? Spain 2, France 0 on Saturday night. Xabi Alonso, you wouldn't have picked him for both goals. That's
nice.
No, 100th
appearance as well.
What do you make of the header? Good
header?
Excellent header. I wasn't sure. I thought, what's he doing?
No?
Because
I've never seen him head
back
a ball before.
No, that's and the other thing I was going to say.
But he arrived late, like the late run, down into the ground. It's a great header.
Do you not start the move as well?
I think he might have done it as well. I think he might be right.
I think he invented the game. Everything was Xabi Alonso.
Yeah. The upshot of which, from all the quarterfinals, is that if you looked at the tournament pre-tournament, as we did, there was two strong groups. One not so strong group and one rubbish group. As it's turned out, the two strong groups have got us 4 of the semi-finalists, haven't they? Germany and Portugal progressing from Group B. Spain and Italy progressing from Group C.
Yeah.
So, tonight's game, Portugal-Spain.
I'm excited.
I'd lost
a little bit of love from football. Not going to say after Sunday, I was a little bit upset. Monday, yesterday, even today. I'd lost a little bit of the passion for the Euros. But I think it's going to be reignited this evening.
Now you can sit back and watch it and just hope that it's a good game.
People keep talking about recently about Spain being boring. I've been banging on about that for years. They are the most dull team to watch. It's just pass. They're great.
It's a different problem of defensive, but it's not exciting. Their attitude
but
is that if we get we keep the ball, the other team can't score.
That's why I'm hoping Ronaldo, the most direct player in world football.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm hoping he does
it
that.
Really
and Portugal,
of styles,
they've beaten
it?
Spain a couple of times quite heavily in the last few years.
I disagree though with that. With them being boring, they've been boring this tournament. But I think when they had David Villa in the team, they were a lot
better.
They've missed David Villa. Because I mean, the fact that they've played 2 out of 4 games without a striker on the pitch is absolutely outrageous.
Yeah.
And still banging in the goals. It's not like 1-0s, are they? It's still
ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, the Ireland game aside, I guess it's not been a. They've not scored that many goals. But I think.
Do you reckon Torres will start tonight?
No.
You don't?
No.
No. I think
Fabregas up front again.
I don't know why they've not given Llorente a run up front because he was a fantastic.
Because he just doesn't fit into their.
But I think he could. I think he could very easily. They're that good a team.
But if you have someone like Llorente on the pitch, because they get it wide so well, and then they cut back across, and then they go back across, and they try and. But if they actually got it wide,
they've got wide. They don't get wide.
That Portugal defender is
not great. That's his strength.
True.
But that's what they could do if Llorente was playing.
But they don't. They just. It's not in their mentality to do that. That's what I'm saying. They've grown up
because
passing the ball.
But again, because they've got Fabregas up front, though. With Torres, they're more likely, again, to whip across it. With Fabregas,
not.
They're going to whip across
it. I guess they're currently clearly basing the team on the Barcelona club side. Maybe if they do pass it on the Marcelo Bielsa's Athletic Bilbao side with Llorente out front, it would provide them more of a cutting edge because they have better players who keep the ball better but play in a very similar way to Athletic and can counter-attack quickly. And then you've got Lorenzo out front who can hold the ball up and can also put it in with his head.
I want to know what the French waiter thinks of this game.
He's not happy.
Well, I'd like to replace Stuart Hall with a French waiter.
He's already had more.
He's already said more things than Stuart has in the last match.
Germany, Italy.
Yeah, Germany, Italy. What were we saying to that, fellas?
Clash
of the fascists.
Yeah. Although, did you see the picture of Balotelli published in Gazzetta dello Sport this morning?
You've just ruined that, haven't you?
Mocked up as King Kong.
Yes.
Which,
but it was meant to be. Yeah, they've now apologised and they've now said, you know, it was our cartoonist kind of got it a bit wrong. But the idea was because it was him as King Kong.
Can you start again?
Right.
German newspaper.
The Italian newspaper, Gazzetta dello Sport, the most respected sports paper in Italy. Yeah.
Basically, had Balotelli climbing Big Ben, swatting footballs off instead of helicopters, and it was trying to represent how Balotelli was going to scale the British Monument and take over, you know, be the dominant figure over England. It was before that. It was just before the England game, wasn't it?
I thought it was yesterday.
They depicted as him being a hero and combating the English. Unfortunately, making him out to be King Kong with all the things that's happened.
Did you also see the picture that the far right Italian politician published on Twitter of him in the field after the Ireland game? That was terrible. Can you imagine a politician doing this in this country?
Pictured him as a worker in one of the cornfields that they have over in Italy.
It was a lettuce field.
And a lot of the. Is it the immigrants that come in and work in the fields?
Yeah.
They come over from Africa, and they basically accuse. It was shocking,
he was a disgrace when he came on. He scored and didn't celebrate. He nearly got sent off. Yeah. He's only good for working in the fields, eh?
It was terrible.
He's good for working in one field because he's a bloody good footballer. Yeah. So let's be honest about that. All right. So can any of us look past the Germans tonight?
No.
It depends what Pirlo does. But I think the Germans will manage him a lot better.
The fact that the only
I do think Germany will win, but
the only winners after 120 minutes on a Sunday night, the Germans.
Yeah.
Sitting there absolutely loving it, watching us just run ourselves ragged. Italy have got a couple of injuries. They've now got a player suspended.
To be fair, though,
Germany have had two extra days to prepare as well. But
though, I mean, you say it all rests on Pirlo, but. You know, I mean, according to Phil Brown, he's just a massive homophobic.
Yeah.
Mm.
Who, Pirlo?
Yeah.
Have
you seen this, Dave?
No, but I know. I do know.
Was it yesterday? On Five Live.
And Phil Brown's normally such an intelligent.
Exactly. I know. He said it was in reference to. It was fantastic, really. Well, he said that it was talking about Pirlo. People didn't really respect how good he was because and why has he never come over to England? Wouldn't he want to play in the Premier League?
The only way you can carve a name out for yourself is by playing in the Premier League.
People keep talking about this Messi lad.
I've no idea.
He's no James Beattie.
So he was saying that why has he never come to England? Phil Brown said why has Pirlo never come to England? Maybe he didn't fancy the Premier League. Maybe he's just a bit homophobic.
If you said it in that sentence.
Yes. So
what he was trying to say is that maybe he was afraid of leaving. Not afraid of foreigner, afraid of leaving home. I think that's the idea, is that he didn't want to leave Italy. So he was homophobic and he was afraid of leaving home.
Surely that would make him scared of his home if he was homophobic. Surely he'd be a homophile if he was.
Maybe he's just out in the whole of the Premier League.
Phil Brown's just an idiot.
It was brilliant the way he went. Yeah, maybe he's just a homophobic. What, Phil? You mean he doesn't want to leave his home?
That's on the website.
Yeah,
that's on the website. Okay, well done. www.footballcast.co.uk.
I've got one more little bit before.
We've chatted for 42 minutes about nothing that we wanted to actually chat about.
But something that comes up, and something you've got to, I'll see if I can get it on the website. It is fantastic. Has anyone seen Lukas Podolski's new single?
I've seen Tom Cleverley's Leisurewear this week, but not Lukas Podolski's single.
No, it is. And just imagine how bad you reckon it could be. Times that by 100. It is outstanding.
Is it as good as Andy Cole's single or Ian Wright's single?
No, it's even better. It's with Cologne-based band Brings. And it's,
I love Brings.
And it's,
I bet they stink. Where are they from?
Cologne, come on!
Sorry,
I'll give you that one.
Thank you.
And it's called Hallelujah.
Is it a cover of Jeff Buckley?
It is absolutely wonderful. And I mean, it's definitely a bit tongue in cheek. Fair to say, Lucas Podolski definitely can't sing. And he's there wearing a white t-shirt and with a tartan tie, like a necktie around him. And the main singer for the band has got these dodgy tartan trousers on, and it's just
it's a Scottish independence
it's a Proclaimer.
Honestly, it is absolutely wonderful. Hopefully it's on YouTube. I'll try and get it up, but it is well done, Lucas Podolski. You must.
Right, fair dues. We're going to move on to something quickly. Have you got a little Rangers update?
Rangers update, yes. Well, basically, Rangers had to get the approval of 8 out of the 12 SPL teams in order to remain in the SPL. They've set up a new company called the Rangers Football Club Limited.
But on the fixtures, they're known as Club 12. And I said, if they put an S in front of that, they might get a few more people through the gate, a few more teenagers through the gate.
Right, you never know. Bradley's doing his thing.
It's Club 12.
Joe's looking out for romance.
Surely that would only have worked if they were called Club 7.
No, it's Club 12. 12. They've got a bit older. Come on. There's 12 of them.
Either that or it's some horrible clubbing holiday with 11 kids. That maybe Jay's got.
Looking for her,
But,
look. Jay's not been on holiday, he's homophobic. Yeah. Oh, God. No one's ever going to have said that on a podcast before, he's homophobic, and then everyone laughs with Raw.
But, so basically, they've set up as a new club with all the assets bought by Charles Green, who used to be an investor in Sheffield United. But 6 SPL clubs, Hearts, Hibs, Dundee United, Aberdeen, St Johnstone and Inverness Cali Thistle, have come out saying they will vote against them, so they can't enter the SPL.
You nasty bastard.
Eight players, including Stephen Davis, Alan McGregor, Stephen Naismith, Stephen Whittaker, Sonny Luco, have come out and said they won't transfer over to the new club because they have the right to. Lee Wallace is the only player who's come out and said he will transfer over.
And
he plays for Scotland. He is a defender slash
midfielder. They know him as William.
They've got a club.
Technically they have a company that could be a club.
Yeah.
They don't have a place in the SPL. The SFL were looking to put them in the first division, but Raith Rovers and Falkirk have both come out and said they would oppose them being in the first division.
Mike, the question I've got is, how is this different to what other clubs have done? Like the likes of Leicester City have done the same sort of thing, haven't they? And other
But they've never gone into proper liquidation.
Think it's the way they go into administration. A company voluntary agreement. Yeah. See the CBA.
Similar.
And every other club has managed to get this agreement with the people they owe money to, that will pay you this amount to reform.
It's now similar to Chester City or Halifax, who've had to go into the English non-league.
There are criminal investigations as well.
Investigation to Craig White. He's a massive shyster.
Allegedly.
They can now look. Allegedly, yes.
I don't know if that's necessary, but
they're now looking. Well, they will have to look if the rest of the first division teams say no, we won't have them there. To be the club that replaces the former Rangers going into the third division. However, there's also Spartans from the East of Scotland League and Cove Rangers from the Highland League who will oppose it and have tried to join the SFL before. So
the upshot is, when will a decision be? When will Rangers know what league they're playing in?
It's not likely to be known for another couple of weeks. It's still up in the air. I mean, there's no time for it. But Charles Green now owns the assets.
And I thought it was a bit of shit that Spurs haven't got a manager.
Yeah.
Charles Green. See, it's been 47 minutes and I haven't mentioned Spurs once.
Now you've mentioned him twice.
Yes.
But Charles Green now owns Ibrox. He now owns the training ground, which is one of the best training grounds in the country.
Really?
So you would expect them to be let into the third division. But when they get there, it's whether or not they can maintain this level. I mean, with the money they've got coming in, can they maintain such a big training ground? Can they maintain Ibrox?
We'll have an update next week, hopefully, on again.
Surely they must consider as well contacting the Football League and saying, look, instead of starting in the third division of Scottish football, start in League Two.
There were rumours last week about them buying Bury and going into League One, which Bury very quickly refuted.
Buying Bury and merging the clubs.
Similar in Scotland happened a few years ago. I think it was East Stirling, or it might be it was East Stirling got bought by fans of Airdrie who went out of business and got reformed as Airdrie United. In fact, no, it wasn't. I'm wrong. It was Clydebank.
Clydebank.
Sorry, we're just named Scottish football team.
No, Peterhead, I've massively lost interest in this.
So Clydebank got bought by Airdrie and reformed as Airdrie United.
Wonderful. That's really interesting. Let's just sort of.
Oh, it's generally.
Okay, we'll talk about Spurs. Spurs.
Gillingham, Spurs. The racist.
Yes,
it's much more interesting.
Alleged racist.
Okay. We've talked about this already. It's just been bumbling on for a while.
Mark McCammon
signed on a 3-year contract. Quickly transpired.
Just to say that
one thing that's not alleged is that he's a terrible footballer.
Yeah, it's been bumbling on for a while, but it's only this week that it's now starting to be real.
It's gone to trial.
It's damning now.
It's gone to trial.
That's why.
The second day.
And Saeb was saying it as well. Is that one of them? Either way. One case, either him for lying about it, or the club, if it's true, one of them is in a lot of trouble.
He's claiming, I'll tell you exactly what he's claiming. He's claiming race discrimination, basically.
Serious race discrimination.
Yeah, very, very serious. He's claiming that they refused treatment for an injury, doctors' pay, and fined him for not turning up in heavy snow.
He said that one of the white players was flown to Dubai for treatment, and he was told he could wait a few months and get an operation on the NHS. Which, if that's true, again, it's all.
Well, what he's actually suing for is race discrimination, breach of contract, unfair dismissal, discrimination, breach of contract, unfair dismissal, and failure of his ex-employer to pay him. So he's saying that he's owed money as well. But I mean, some of the things he's coming out with are just outrageous. The fact that him and the two other players that he lived with at the time, all three that were black players, were treated differently to white players at the club. He left the club under a cloud because he was rubbish, and then he said that we stopped him getting. The other two guys carried on playing for us for 2 years. So if they were racially discriminated against, how could they carry on?
It's a difficult situation. If you're in that position where you're unsure of your job, you are playing, a lot of people do bottle up the sort of things happening. And I'm not saying Gillingham have by any means done it. But you can't just say the fact that they stayed on there for 2 years meant that they weren't being racially discriminated against.
These weren't the only black players at the club as well. From the first day at call.
What year was it? When to when?
We're talking about November 2010. It was, I think, when
up
the.
Until, through what? 8 to 10? 2008 to 2010? Or from 2010 to
he
now?
Signed in 2008, so right. It was released in 2011. Right. But the case that came to yesterday, so all this stuff's coming out because it's in court at the moment at Ashford. What came out yesterday was basically there was a heavy snowfall and the three players had to get into training. They lived about 10 minutes drive from the football club. And I can't see how they wouldn't be able to get in because the drive that they'd have to do is motorway, which wouldn't be cleared anyway. Anyway, by the by, they phoned up the club and said, no, we can't come in to training or to report into the club because the snow's too bad. In which case, our chairman said, we'll take a photo, show us how bad the snow is. And then they just turned up at the club because obviously the snow wasn't that bad. And he's claiming somehow that is discrimination.
He said that other white players didn't have to make it in.
But not that live in the same house.
But we don't know where the other white players lived. I mean, we can go on Google Maps and have a look around if we want.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's a tricky thing.
Whatever happens either way, whatever comes out of this, one of them is in a lot of trouble. That's what we can say, and it'll be TBC. We'll see how it comes.
The problem is, though, if Gillingham are found to be innocent, there's no reason you can say that Mark McCammon is necessarily lying. And maybe he is. I'm sure he might be embellishing certain things out of it. In these situations, so Gillingham will embellish things, and so will Mark McCammon.
But you can't say
he's guilty of lying if Gillingham aren't found guilty.
Exactly.
Gillingham don't need to embellish anything; they just need to tell their version of the truth. As Mark, like,
but that in its very nature is embellishing. If it's your version of the truth, you're going to be
you tell the truth. They're not going to stand up and make things up about certain people. They've just got to stand there and say, right. Well,
I mean, you don't know.
He's a rubbish football player with a massive chip on his shoulder.
Possibly.
I know for a fact he's definitely that. He's a rubbish footballer and he's got a massive chip on his shoulder.
Definitely a rubbish footballer.
Whether there's truth in the allegations, I'm not refuting that. But regardless of what he's doing and how he's been into court, he's a rubbish footballer.
Let's just stop talking about Gillingham all the time.
Spurs.
One last thing I would like to say is whilst with me and Sean talking about this the other day, I remember that when Mark McCammon first joined the club and he was our highest paid player and we thought he was going to be brilliant, I became friends with him on Facebook.
Yeah, that's right.
And so that is, and I'll put these photos up on the site, that's how people know Mark McCammon.
Yeah, that's a big lad.
This is what I found on Facebook. Someone explain that to the listeners.
What is that? It's basically Mark McCammon on some sort of strange. It's like a cross between a cross trainer and a bike.
And,
it's not a cross between a cross trainer and an exercise bike. It's an actual bike.
Yeah.
It's just brilliant. And he's got fluorescent jacket on as well.
And a balaclava.
I don't know. Yeah. And short, very short shorts.
And a hat and a helmet. That's, that's not
good. And it's not snowing. I can tell you that for nothing.
Speaking of rubbish footballers who you're friends with on Facebook, I used to be friends with Franny Jeffs on Facebook, but that's another story for another time.
It is indeed. Also,
next week we'll find out why Mario Balotelli has the Why Always Me t-shirt.
Next week there is a lot of stuff. Basically, we'll talk about the semi-finals and the final. We'll spend a few minutes on that. There's been some domestic stuff going on, fellas.
Really?
We haven't actually
Harry.
We haven't mentioned Harry Redknapp leaving. The fixtures have been released. QPR have got a few players signed.
I don't think we've mentioned Man City getting bought by the Abu Dhabi lot yet, have we?
We covered that. Danny Murphy to Blackburn happened this week. Yeah. Bellamy apparently back to Cardiff.
The Stanley Matthews Cup final.
There is a lot of news for us to catch up on. So we'll start doing that. Next week
we've not even done our predictions yet,
and we've missed out on Naughty Boys.
Sammy Nasri,
Troy Deeney, very naughty boy. England fans with their penises out. Joey Barton,
he's always a naughty boy.
We'll talk about this and more next week as well.
We'll see you in 10 months, Troy.
Cheers. Well, come on, you can't. Yeah, we can say that.
He's been
in 5.
Definitely a naughty boy. Cheers, guys.
See you.